All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com, a local folks doing local podcast. Good morning. February the 23rd, 2025. Beautiful day here on the East Coast. I hope it's great wherever you are at. It is actually beautiful out. Beautiful. Just standing outside. Awesome. Getting ready to go out do some ocean paddling. I told my coach I'm about as fat as I can get. I need some exercise. Oh, my God. And so he laughed. I'm sure we all feel that way. So I'm very excited to get outside and do some exercise and get some sunshine. Whew, I need it, man. I'm not one to believe in a lot of this winter depression, but I do feel like my thoughts have been a little dark. So it'll be good. Super excited. But yeah, hope everyone is doing well. I just sat down or just got finished sitting down with two of the guys I'm sponsoring. And one of the guys I met with last week, and we read the first step. And then the other guy, he asked me if we could do the first step. So I said, well, come on over and we'll sit down and read the first step. And then the first guy asked if he could come and read the first step with us and have a chat. And so we all got together this morning and did the first step and started talking about the second step. But the first step, you know, it is a simple little step, right? It's probably the shortest step in the book. I don't know how many pages, 3 or 4, 5 maybe, of reading. I always like that. I like when we're on the first step because there's not a lot of reading. But it's not very, you know, it doesn't sound that complicated, right? We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. And I used to think, well, of course it has, right? Look at me. I've got stitches. I've crashed everything. I've broken everything around me, destroyed every relationship around me. It has to be because of that. And so to admit that I was powerless over alcohol, that my life has become unmanageable, was very easy. But many years later, right, I would look back and think about it, you know, and the reality is we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our life has become unmanageable to everybody else. Judas Priest, Turbo Lover. What is this album? Oh, I think it's called Turbo 3D, Turbo 30. I guess it's a remastered version, but that is off the Turbo album. But yeah, man, it is. It's interesting because the first step to me, and I only share this because I've gone through this evolution of the first step, and really, you know, I've shared before that, you know, when I came into this program, my life had become unmanageable to everybody else. Right? I did not. I probably, you know, I made the decision to get sober drunk. Right? I had gone to a bar and I had gotten into a fight and I ended up in the hospital and I ended up face to face with a nurse and the nurse asked me, "Do you think you have a problem?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Do you think you would like help?" And I said, "Yes." And they admitted me. And, you know, on the surface, I'm like, look at me. I've had enough, right? I want to get better. But, you know, and just chatting with these guys this morning, you know, I had to remind myself that, you know, I did not get sober because I wanted to quit drinking. I got sober. I took that exit because I can't even say I got sober. I took that exit off the highway there because I didn't want to explain why I had stitches again to the guys I worked with. I was embarrassed and I was ashamed and I hid in the hospital all under the umbrella of I wanted to be sober because my life has become unmanageable. And the reality is my life had become unmanageable to everybody else, right? My parents had had enough, my neighbors, my uncle, my brother, my coworkers, and anybody that basically came in contact with me had had enough. And I, like I said the other day, probably could have sat and drank longer. And, but I, you know, I think that is where the hang up is, right? Because I didn't recognize that. I never realized that. I'm like, of course I'm getting sober. Look, I'm here. And like I shared with these two guys this morning, I go, you know, I think, and both of them shared their story of what got them in here, and both of them, their story was basically the same as mine. We got caught too much, right? And I don't think it's bad that, and, you know, it's funny because part of me doesn't, you know, I like to share my story, but there's part of me that wants to share a part of my story that's going to help somebody avoid some of the shit that I had to go through in recovery, and I have to remind myself that that's where really the magic happens is when we sort of, you know, stumble across this kind of stuff. And we have these moments of realization where we're like, man, I didn't come in here because I really thought I drank too much. I came in here because I got caught too much. And I do think it's fine. Whatever can get us in here, right? And it talks about it in the first step. You know, and I have the book right here. Of course, I brought it up. But it says, who cares to admit complete defeat? Practically no one, of course. Every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. It is truly awful to admit that glass in hand, we had warped our minds into such an obsession of destructive drinking that only an act of providence can remove it from us. Right? The act of providence. Ego devastation, complete humiliation, devil evacuation, right? I mean, all those are devils, but it's that act of complete humiliation that allows the devil to get out that spirit and gives us that small window to try and address our issues. And so I think whatever gets us here, it's great. And, you know, I don't want to spoil all the secrets, but I do think it is important, and I shared that with these guys this morning, that we recognize, and it was important that I recognize, right, that I'm not sure I'm here because I really had enough drinking. I'm here because I had enough getting caught, and that's it's great motivation to get us into this program. But unfortunately, it fades, right? Because there is unfortunately fear involved in that again. That our old friend fear, and like any fearful thing, you know, we are immediately, you know, afraid, but then we realize that we can make it and the fear fades. And unfortunately, as the fear fades, the idea of drinking starts to become a possible. And, you know, hopefully we don't, but like I, you know, for me, I did. And it was a real eye-opening experience because I thought I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, that my life had become unmanageable. I thought I had done the first step. Right. And what it is I had admitted I got caught, but I think I still had reservations that I didn't make. I think they were just secret reservations back of my mind that said, hey, listen, if we can fix all this stuff, maybe we can drink again. Never said that out loud to myself, but I guess that's what the committee was thinking. And, would eventually drink again. And, I don't know. It was a great chat. One of the guys I'm working with is big into the church. We started to kind of get into the second step. The second step I shared with those guys is that I came upon the second step and was like, I really don't want anything to do with this. I have attempted to build a relationship with God and it has failed. I have reached out and asked God to be part of my life and he has not. And so I don't know what to make of this. I'm going to nod, yes, I like it, but I don't know. And let's go on to the third step, right? And even the third step, even has the thought of God in it. And so I probably, side-skirted that one a bit. But the relationship I have today, and I look back at the guy, and I shared this story, and I've even shared it, I think, the podcast I did yesterday with my buddy Matt. You know, I always wanted Matt to think that I was doing better than I was. Because what was I doing? I was afraid I would lose. I mean, even as a sponsor, even as him sponsoring me, I was afraid that if I wasn't doing and looking and acting like I was supposed to, he'd drop me. And I was afraid to lose. Listen, back in those days, I didn't really care that he was my sponsor. I really cared that he was my friend. I really cared that I associated with a guy at the level he was at. It made self feel better. We never really worked the steps. We did some, but I'd done the steps so many times. I think it was like, he was like, I think you're willing. It is what it is. But I was trying to preserve our friendship more than I was trying to preserve him being my sponsor. And so... But I always, and today, because Matt's gone, but that's how I try to think about this higher power. I believe that God is watching over me and I try to live my life as such, right? I don't believe that if I do things that aren't in the pocket of God, that a lightning bolt will come down. I don't believe that, I don't believe in a punishing God. I believe in a guiding God. I believe in a God that through intuition and through memory and through, my history and my past and he guides me, right? And I feel it in my heart. And when I came into this program, I was out of the pocket. I was in the pocket of the devil. And I lived that way. And it's all fear and self and gluttony. And it's really hard to even get a glimpse of what a relationship with God is. And I shared with the guys this morning, I go, I remember driving home from that first meeting, not drunk, right? I was a drunk driver. And so every day I'd be so tormented about the night before and the night coming up. Like, I can't believe you drove your car last night under the influence again. And let's not do it tonight, right? It was always, it was double the fear of the past and fear of the future, right? It was terrible. And I remember driving home for that first time from that meeting and not being drunk and just having this peace come over me. Like, my God, I don't know why we're here, but if it was just for this reason to not drink and drive, we have found some success and it felt good. And what I thought was feeling good was just a life free of fear for that few minutes. And that, to me, is that pink cloud. It's that moment, right? Ego devastation, complete humiliation. The devil is left, and it's just me and the raw feelings. And I just remember the overwhelming gratitude I had that I wasn't drinking and driving. And for that short moment, I was in the pocket of God, right? I had lost everything. I had nothing to really, I didn't have a relationship. My one child, my wife had taken him, so I didn't have to worry about that. I don't even think I was working. I think I was in hair school. I didn't really have to worry about that. I had nothing to worry about. All I had to worry about was just that small, I'm not drinking and driving. And shit, I wasn't in hair school. Let me think. I had a job, but I didn't have a lot of responsibilities. This is back in 97. And But I just and it just felt good, and right, and over time, right, we start being like, okay, well, I'm not drinking and driving, right? So I'm gonna stop being blown away by that fact, and the rest of life starts creeping in, and that pink cloud starts to fade away, right? Because we don't understand. I didn't understand the battle between self and humility, right? And so, but it's just that process, and. But now today, you know, trying to live this life, and I was sharing with the guys, I'm like, you know, when you get to this place, rigorous honesty, half measures avail us nothing, right? We start getting in that pocket, right? When we start finding all this stuff and we start cleaning up the wreckage of our lives, it turns out we don't need, or here, let me change that. Turns out when I started cleaning up the wreckage of my life and understanding through the steps, the fourth, the fifth, the sixth, the seventh, right? The eighth, the ninth, stop having to look over my shoulder, right? And I start to really clean it up thoroughly. It turns out I, personally, do not need God as much. Or at least don't need to reach out and ask for him. Because at that point, I'm in the pocket of God, right? I'm in that G-O-D, that good orderly direction, right? I'm living it. And then I start flirting with when I slip out of it. Right, and that's when it becomes uncomfortable, and I don't have to pray, dear Lord, please fix this. I go, no, Tom, just stop doing dumb shit, right? Stop, continue to take personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admitted it, and then stop doing it. That's the tough part, right? And then until we can do that, it's like a ping pong game or a pinball game, which is bing, bong, bong, happy, sad, worried, fear, no fear, humility, self. It's a bing, ding, ding. And it's all these little things that, you know, flirt us with slipping out of the pocket. And, but, you know, like I told those guys, man, work these steps, work this program, honestly. And at this point, we don't need God, right? The only people that need God are people that can't work on themselves. Unless you just like to hang out with God, right? Because I personally, if I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do and I'm living a good life, honest, I'm living in the presence of that G-O-D, right? If I'm not, I'm out there and I have to learn through these steps and through talking to people what I need to do to get back into the pocket, right? But it doesn't need to be, you know, days out of the pocket, right? Unless, you know, and I've shared, you know, if something's coming up and I have to be aware, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm not going to be in the pocket, right? Because other devils are going to start showing up about, you know, inconvenience and arrogance and all that other shit. And next thing you know, I'm bugged and I'm bothered and I'm grumpy and I'm you know, popping off. And, you know, I can recognize that, you know, and over time, like over, there's been times where I've suffered through that. And today I'm like, this is what's going to happen. It's going to be an inconvenience. I'm just recognizing it. I'm going to try to do the best I can. But if I get to a place where I'm losing my shit, this is why. It's not because of, you know, just this mystery. No, I'm being inconvenienced. Arrogance has showed up and a new set of rules have showed up. And I'm out of the pocket. You know, we have to learn these things today. And it's over time. And, you know, like I said, and like I told them, you know, I don't want to, like, I can't, there's no shortcuts in this program. You know, somebody couldn't come up to me and say, listen, man, if you do this and this, and you understand about this and being in the pocket, you're going to skip a big portion of this. Not really. You have to live it. You know, I have had to live it and continue to have to live it. And one day at a time, the ups and the downs, the highs and the lows, I guess that's the same as ups and downs, but you know, we walk through it. But I do think, you know, I thought it was important, and it's really been a lot of years that, you know, that I felt like, yeah, of course I admitted I was powerless over alcohol. My life has become unmanageable, really. But there's a separation between getting caught and really being convinced that you're really bad at drinking. And, I know today that I cannot drink. I'm not sure I knew that the first time I came in, right? I knew that I was bad at my behavior, and I knew I was bad at getting caught at all of it, and I knew I was really bad at creating a lot of problems. But the drinking, right? Like, if I could just take the drinking and driving out of it and the fighting, I mean, I think, and it's funny, I always, and I still do this, I still compare. Like, I'm like, you know, I didn't drink that much. You know, my buddy, he had a 0.4, right? He was about dead. I never drank that much, right? I hear about people that you have to drink in the mornings to just get their day going. I never drank like that. You know, there's always this part in the back of my mind that goes, well, you didn't drink that bad, right? But I drink bad enough. I destroy everything around me when I drink. And I just would rather be in the pocket, man. I don't want to live that horrible existence anymore. So, but it was great to sit down with those guys and you know, read and you know, because I also have to really try to take a look at myself and not to, you know, I'm not lecturing, right? And I told those guys, listen, I'm just like you. I just somehow have put some time between my last drink and now, but I'm just like you, man. We're all the same. I'm no better. My buddy Jim, he's always like, there's all these gurus. I am no guru. I am absolutely not a guru in this program. I know nothing. But I've experienced some stuff, and I can share that. But we're doing this together, and I have to, be grateful for that. What else was there? Was something else in this first step? I thought was no other kind of bankruptcy is like this one. Alcohol now becomes the rapacious creditor, bleeds us of all self-sufficiency and all will to resist its demands. Once this dark fact is accepted, our bankruptcy is going, human concerns is complete. But upon entering AA, we soon take quite another view of this absolute humiliation. That's right. Absolute humiliation, complete deflation, or ego devastation, which is that act of providence. We perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first steps towards liberation and strength. Our admission of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. I never thought about when I drank how I couldn't stop. I thought I just called it I love drinking, right? It would be, I have to really take a hard look at it, but once I put the alcohol in my mouth, I literally can't stop. It just is this the rapacious predator, right? It just takes off. And I never thought that. I never realized that. I thought I just really enjoyed drinking. And so my desire to drink more and more and more was just my love of it. I didn't really understand that when I put the alcohol, and this is for me, but once I put that alcohol in me, it opens up the gates of hell, right? These are all fucking devils, man, in the way I talk, the way I behave. It's not me. They're all spiritual entities. And I just thought I loved drinking. Like, hell yeah, I'll take another. Hell yeah. But the reality is, I didn't realize this, back in the drinking days of in the bar before I became an absolute complete asshole. I could still hang out in bars, right? I just thought I loved drinking. But when it would be at home, right, and I all by myself, and I'd buy that bottle and take it home, and I'd be like, is this going to be enough? Because I know once I start, I can't drink. Will this be enough? Because what will happen is if it isn't, I'm going to drive. There'll be no, maybe I shouldn't. We'll just, pick up it a little extra tomorrow. It is, if I'm out, I'm going out. And, I didn't realize that how powerful that alcohol was. And I could black out and just keep drinking. And like my buddy, he said he had a 0.4. I mean, that is a lot of freaking drinking. I think I do think it's important that we recognize that. We don't want to just be the guy that likes to drink a lot. I think it's more important that we are the person that can't stop. There's many facets of this disease. That's one of them. If I put it, like they say, it's the first drink that gets us drunk, because if we don't put that first one in, we won't get drunk. But if we put the first one in, we cannot stop. And I think that's the same story for all of us, right? It is that the malady that's in us that just turns a switch that doesn't allow us to stop drinking. But if I can, avoid it by not drinking. But then there's that other side, the isms, right? The character defects, all the other shit that this program allows us to work on and get better, that I think is just, it's the, that's the first part is, you know, like I always say, if you have a drink, just call me tomorrow, because there's nothing, right, that I can do. But it's that second half, that isms part, that tries to prevent us from keeping the voices away that tell us that drinking is something we can do, right? Because the voice is like, man, maybe you just drink the wrong thing. Or, man, maybe you just shouldn't go to that bar, right? And it starts to justify our behavior, and then we go back to point A where we put the drink, and then we can't stop, and it all starts over again. So, you know, I think the two parts of this are important, and yeah. All right, let's see. I'm going to read the Daily Reflection, and then I'm going out ocean paddling. I say I'm so excited, but partly, you know, it's going to be tough. But it's going to be beautiful. The weather's so nice out, so I'm excited. Let's see. Daily Reflections. Daily Reflections. Mysterious Paradoxes, February the 23rd. Such is the paradox of AA's regeneration, strength arising out of complete defeat and weakness, the loss of one's old life as a condition for finding a new one. Yeah, that's AA Comes of Age, page 46. What glorious mysteries paradoxes are. They do not compute, yet when recognized and accepted, they reaffirm something in the universe beyond human logic. When I face a fear, I am given courage. When I support a brother or sister, my capacity to love myself is increased. When I accept pain as part of the growing experience of life, I realize a greater happiness. When I look at my dark side, I am brought into new light. When I accept my vulnerabilities and surrender to a higher power, I am graced with unforeseen strength. I stumbled through the door of AA in disgrace, expecting nothing from life, and I have been given hope and dignity. Miraculously, the one way to keep the gifts of the program is to pass them on. That's right. Yep. All right. Well, listen, I am going to ocean paddling. I appreciate you letting me share. I hope everyone has a great day, and we'll catch you later. Bye-bye. Let's go.